The sea of chaos and tears and pain is no more. The sea of chaos, of tears and pain is no more. What a picture from the reading from the book of Revelation. This city, this Jerusalem, this holy city descends down from God. And there is a new heaven and a new earth, and the tears are no more. What evocative imagery. What cryptic imagery. I feel like I need a magnifying glass even to try and find my way. I feel like when I read this, I enter a little bit of the twilight zone. It's like this language calls something out of me that I am both familiar with and completely unfamiliar with at the same time. We have, in our tradition, put some poems to music that speak of the city of Jerusalem in our time, trying to understand it and almost tame it. I'm thinking here of the poem by William Blake called Jerusalem. And did those feet in ancient time walk upon England's mountains green? Now let me think about that one for a moment. Bring me my spear, O clouds unfold. Bring me my chariot of fire. I will not cease from mental fight till we have built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land. They are beautiful words. They are beautiful words. But I wonder if in some way we have tamed these images, made them so familiar that the impact is now weakened. So today, in the words of New Testament professor Harry Myers, I want us to discover these images afresh. He says that when he reads Revelation, Revelation reads him. What a great line. There is something that it has to say to us, that it has to undo within us when we read it in our time and in our place. The title of Harry Myers' book on Revelation is called The Apocalypse Recalled. But this is the line I want us to pay attention to. It's the subtitle of the book. The Book of Revelation after Christendom. The Book of Revelation after Christendom. After we thought that this great city of God would descend and shift the way things are. We are reading Revelation into our context now. It is after the hope of all of that is beginning to subside. He writes this. The book of Revelation is indispensable to mainstream first world churches who are struggling to come to terms with the possibility of institutional mortality. Hard words. He says it is in these words of St. John's Revelation that we could find the courage to envision new ways of being in society as the church. So I invite you to go on a journey with me through this sermon. Let us open our imagination. Let us not rely on learnt concepts, but let's use that Buddhist idea of the beginner's mind and take this text at face value from the beginning, as if we had nothing else there. Imagine no prior concept of heaven. And then we read Revelation 21. If this were so, we would come to the Greek word, ouranos, and it would have two meanings. The word ouranos in Greek is used all over the New Testament, and it's either used for the visible sky, which we can actually see today with the sun shining, or it's used for the invisible realm of God invading us. The invisible realm of God invading us. And it really is only based on the context to see which way we would go with this word. Well, when we heard Revelation 21 read, verse 3 says, "See, the home of God is among mortals." And so it is this second definition of the word arenos, heaven, that John is referring to here. The invisible realm of God invading us. The invisible realm of God invading us and slowly becoming visible among us. What interests me as well is that as John was writing this vision down, he writes his experiences of the vision in past tense. I heard a voice. I saw a new heaven and a new earth. All past tense. But when he writes the actual vision, it is the present continuous tense. It is happening now, and it continues to happen. It is always already and always still unfolding. Heaven, for us, when we understand it this way, is not only the concept of where we might experience life after death, but more accurately, St. John's vision is inviting us to think of a heaven now that breaks in and keeps breaking in. I love the way Eugene Peterson, who has now departed from us 3 weeks ago, he passed. He translated the message and Revelation 21 verse 3. He writes this: "Look, God has moved into the neighborhood. Look, God has moved into the neighborhood already. The invisible realm of God invades us now." There is something, you know, when we think about the Gospels, whenever the word heaven was used in the context of God invading our time, when the disciples would see and hear things that they couldn't see or hear before. It's like those things beyond what we see break in. There is a clarity, and it's not out there. It's immediate. It is here and now. And it is something that's a little bit mysterious. We cannot grasp it with all of our five senses right now. But we get a glimpse, or a taste, or a touch, or we hear something, and we open up to something more, something beyond that is all around us. When the invisible becomes visible, it's when the justice of God becomes our present-day justice. The comfort of God, our present-day comfort. The peace of God, our present-day peace. The compassion of God, our present-day compassion. And the light of God becomes our present-day light, especially when we feel lost. So sometimes the things of God break in our actions, in our doing. Sometimes they break in our worship or in our seeking contemplative spaces. There are intricate and deep continuities between heaven and earth that flow both ways. It's like heaven and earth kiss. And it happens sometimes in the most unlikely places. When I was doing some research with people who lived with a diagnosis of schizophrenia, one of the things that changed me was being trusted with stories of spiritual visions. When people would share with me stories that were most often interpreted as psychotic experiences. And together we would talk about them as if they were real. There was something of a thin place. There was something of heaven and earth meeting in those moments. Thin places is part of the Celtic tradition, where the place of heaven and the divide of earth is thinner, and we somehow experience something of God and of the saints before us. Christine Volta's paintness says that especially in these times, during the Feast of All Saints and All Souls, especially when we encounter the feast right now, the Celtic Feast of Samhain, which marks the beginning of this dark half of our year in the Northern Hemisphere. It is especially in these times where we believe it is a thin place, where our ancestors who are in the realm of God are especially accessible across the veil. Something wonderful, this mystical reality of God that breaks in. For me, there are other thin places. When I preside at the Eucharist, I couldn't get through the prayer without crying when I was training to be a priest. I would feel the closeness of God and the closeness of those I had loved and lost. I think we've experienced that here maybe once. When I walk a labyrinth, it's a thin place. I get clarity and I see images that are helpful. When I visit monasteries or retreat centers, somehow these are places where heaven and earth embrace. And so if our vision of heaven shifted to these mysterious times when God breaks into our world, how does that actually help us as people who follow Christ day by day? And how does it help us to be Christians in a world where being church is changing so rapidly? Well, I think that one of the keys might be in the way we understand the image of the holy city descending from God, the new Jerusalem. Might sound like a strange thing to say because it's actually one of the images of Christendom. The image where we would build great churches and great cities and the whole world would become Christian. But what if this metaphor was understood slightly differently? What if it was the process of embodying a vision? What if heaven is not a garden or Arcadia or a retreat place when we actually leave a city to go to nature? What if heaven was this descending city? What if heaven was formed out of a city, formed out of the places we know, the noisy places with dirty streets? Is that not a city? The murderous alleys, the adulterous bedrooms, the corrupt courts, the commercialized churches, the thieving tax collectors. This is the stuff from which heaven is formed. It is the stuff of a city. And God breaks into these places moment by moment, not in some grand display, but in the places where you and I walk and live and say, peace be with you. When we get a grand idea, we usually idealize the image. You know, Gordon would understand this. When I decided to start a PhD, I had this romantic picture, you know, studying by candlelight, reading my favorite books, writing just flowing sentences from my heart, you know, receiving glowing reviews. But it's not like that. It's late nights of rewrites
It's scrolling through journal indexes and waiting anxiously for feedback that almost always says, getting there, but not quite. And when God gives us as a community a vision or calls us in a particular direction, it will not be the ideal image we have in our heads. It will be formed out of the stuff we do, the places we are in, the stuff of cities, the hard work, the broken systems, the getting names wrong on bulletins, the hard relationships, the leaky buildings, meetings that go well and don't go well, budgets look good and don't make the cut. This is the stuff out of which heaven and vision is made. This, my friends, is Jerusalem descending. It is a picture of God breaking into our now. Into the mess and the chaos. It is the invisible realm of God invading us. So will you join me in opening up to God all around us, to heaven that surrounds us, to longing for what is to come, but also expecting Christ to enter our context in every moment of every day. Let us trust God that his words are trustworthy. Behold, I am making all things new.